All right, welcome everyone. This is our quarterly meeting for the Paraprofessional Money Purchase Plan, December 14th. We have committee member Leanna Heiklis, Lisa, and Mike present. Committee member Thomas Lamb is absent. Let's go to the approval of the minutes. We have two meeting minutes to approve, both from our regular quarterly meeting on September 14th and then our special meeting on September 29th. Is there a motion for those minutes?
I'll make a motion for approval.
Thank you, Mike. Is there a second? Everyone else is muted. Is there another committee member who wants to second that motion to approve the minutes?
I second.
Thank you, Lisa. Okay, all those in favor, just say aye or yes. Mike?
Aye.
Lisa?
Aye.
Aye, Cliff? Hi, Cliff, you're muted.
I'm sorry, I was trying to look at the minutes that I didn't read before.
Sorry, okay. All right, and I am an I, so that item passes. We're gonna jump to the administrative matters. These were three items that were on the last agenda, to discuss. Now that we're with NWPS, they offer a pre-approved plan document instead of our specialized plan document that we're using. We also had discussion on a 59.5 distribution, which I sent two samples of a draft that's not finalized. It's just a draft that our attorney was working on. So I definitely want to discuss that. So she put that into the works. And then also updating on the investment fees. Attorney Fleming, Pam, I know you're on, I believe.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi. I'm going to share it. Can you just go over what you drafted or talk about A and B if you wanted to, or just B for right now? I'm going to share the screen. Give me one second.
Oh, you mean A being the pre-approved plan document?
Yeah, because that wasn't really much in your ballpark, right? That was with NWPS more.
Yeah, I guess I thought, I guess you decided to delay it till probably about now. So, and the question is really not necessarily, if you go on a pre-approved plan document, then you can rely on the opinion letter that the person who drafted the pre-approved plan created and obtained from the IRS. That means you can rely that all of the amendments necessary for changes in the law have been made on that plan document. As it is now, you're on an individually designed plan. So that means each time the law changes, my law firm has to draft the amendment and then send it to you. So generally, being on a pre-approved plan document is less expensive because there are normally no charges for amendments to comply with the legal changes.
Okay.
I'm sorry, did someone say something? Okay. I can't tell if that was somebody actually saying something or if that was just background noise.
No, I think it's background noise. You can continue.
Okay, sorry about that. You haven't made any significant changes to the plan document. So it's not really that the concern being that it's not compliant with the law changes. It's more a matter of, in the long run, the pre-approved plan would likely be less expensive.
Okay.
Or if there is a point where there are a lot of amendments, then you might want to reconsider moving to a pre-approved plan document.
Okay, so just so, because we can, you know, left this on, I think it was talked about the last meeting, we left it on for this meeting. So do any of the other committee members have an opinion on this? Would you want to move forward with it, with NWPS? Would you want to just take it off? And then if it ever comes up again in the future, we can bring it back on.
I would say take it off and bring it back on if we need it in the future, because I don't think there are many changes that goes on to this plan.
Okay.
At this point. So if it has, if it comes to the point where it is becoming an issue of changes taking place, then I think that could be reconsidered.
Okay. Do any other members have a different opinion, or is everyone okay with that?
I'm fine with that, Heikles, too, and Leanna.
Okay. All right. So then we can go to item B, which is what I have on the screen right now. Again, this was just a draft that was brought, created by Attorney Fleming. This is about making an amendment to our current plan document that would include a distribution at age 59 and a half.
And so there were two drafts that went around. In this draft here that's on the screen, this allows a participant to take a distribution if they become part-time or if they're no longer a paraprofessional and they are age 59 and a half. And it's a one-time, all or nothing. They would have to take their entire account balance as currently drafted.
So for instance, I think that would be, let's just say someone goes from a paraprofessional and then becomes a teacher or becomes, you know, someone who, a security guard or something, I believe is what we discussed. Normally how it is, if that happens, they wouldn't be able to withdraw because they're still employed by the city. But this would say that if they're 59 and a half or older, they would be able to withdraw even though they took another job with the city.
As well as part-timers, if they come back to work part-time, they would still be able to take it out if they're 59 and a half.
So that was not what I was, the union had originally proposed. The union had proposed that when a member becomes that 59 and a half, whether they stay on or they go, they are able to withdraw at 59 and a half so that they can plan, you know, their retirement or whatever they want to do. And then if they continue on after they 59 and a half, then they cannot withdraw again until they separate. So they could take that one withdrawal at 59 and a half and never again until they separate. In addition to, if they separate from, additionally, I should say, if a member separate from 3429, then they could withdraw their money. So if they continue to work for the Board of Education, they could still withdraw because this plan is specifically for 3429. So if you're no longer a member of 3429, then you can withdraw and do whatever you want to do. That was the proposal the union had made.
You can withdraw at any time, even if you're not 59 and a half, once you separate from service. So if somebody leaves and they're just 40 years old, they could definitely take their money out at that time. They don't have to wait. And if somebody works for us as a teacher, we have a bunch of members now that are teachers now, mm-hmm. and they can't do anything with that money. Once they become 59 and a half, or if they already are, they can take it out now, they're still working, right, with this amendment, even though they're still working here. But are you're talking about a full-time para continuing to work as a para, but still taking out the money at 59?
At 59 and a half, yes. That's what we had discussed. That's what the first draft had indicated. And so that was what the union had discussed, to allow people who continue to work as a para after 59 and a half, that they can withdraw. for the people who separate, there's no age limit. So if I'm just 40 and I want to take my, because I became a teacher or something else in the Board of Education, I should be able to take my funds along with me because I'm no longer a member of 3429.
This right, but that wasn't allowed. That wasn't allowed before. Before, if you became a teacher, you still had to leave your money in the plan.
Right. So that's what I'm asking. That's what we're asking for the change, so that if somebody leaves, they can take their money from the plan because they're no longer a member of this 3429. So there's no contribution going there and they could do different things with their money.
Right, but not until they're 59 and a half.
No, they don't have to be 59 and a half because they're not leaving at 59 and a half. I could be leaving at 40 to be the teacher and I have money vested. I have $10,000 that I want to do something different with. So I'm leaving 3429. I should be able to take it with me.
So from a legal perspective, if they are no longer a paraprofessional, but they're still employed with the city or the board, they cannot take a distribution until they are 59 and a half, or at least 59 and a half.
So, is separation from service in the way of the IRS, is it in essence the city of New Haven? It's not the union, the bargaining unit, the paraprofessional. Is that the way you're defining it?
Exactly.
So hi, Chris. So the IRS has rules that you can't touch the money until you're either separated from service or 59 and a half.
Okay.
So they're saying, you know, basically that being employed by another union within the city of New Haven you're still an employee of the city of New Haven. So that's not qualified under the IRS terms. I don't think it has to do with the plan itself. I think that's an IRS. Am I correct in that, Pamela?
Yes. Yes.
Do you have a supporting document for that, Pam?
I'd have to look and see what the code regulation on that is.
Yeah, I would love to see that.
If someone left SIRF, and then went to work for a police and fire department, you switch that pension from SIRF to police and fire, or they just start up fresh with police and fire? Like Alyssa, for example, that worked for SIRF and then went
she's
to go work.
She's still
SIRF. Oh, she's still SIRF. Well, let's say she's still
there. So if somebody moved funds completely, then that's where, you know, we have to ask the actuary to get involved to basically move their funds from SIRF over to the PNF fund so that they get the credit in PNF, like their years of service go towards PNF. That's how we do it that way. But even so, sometimes when people will say go from a general fund to a special fund, it was always they can withdraw when they're no longer employed by the city of New Haven.
Gotcha.
Because a special fund person is like Social Security, whereas a general fund is pension.
Okay. So that holds true there as well, then, that same rule.
Right. So what this is doing, this amendment is doing, is now allowing those teachers and those people who are still working here, but they're not paras anymore, but they're still working in some kind of a capacity, but they're 59 and a half. They can now be able to take their funds if they want. They weren't able to do it before.
So why can't the paraprofessional take it when they still continue to work?
Because they're not 59 and a half.
No, if they're 59 and a half, this is not telling us that if they're 59 and a half, they can take it. So that's
I'm sorry, Hyclis. I think Hyclis, you mentioned it before. I think all we really need from Pam is the IRS regulation saying where it states employment piece, because technically, if you move from a para to a teacher, you are still employed by the same entity. I get it that you're not a para anymore and you want to move the money. But if the IRS says, unless there's a break in employment, then you're technically still employed by the same entity. So I think that's the key to this discussion here. Beyond the 59 and a half, because Hyclis, I think what you're saying, if I understand correctly, is why can't a para, if they're 42, let's say, and they move from a para to a teacher, withdraw that money, right?
Mm-hmm. That's one thing. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's important once Pam gets us that IRS ruling or or IRS law, then that's going to be the key to how we move. Because if it's the IRS, we can't do anything about it, right? Because she's right, you're employed. If you're employed as a para or a teacher, you're still employed by the Board of Education.
So clarify for me the 59 and a half. When you're 59 and a half, can a para who is still employed at 59 and a half take that money?
Currently, no, but with this amendment, yes.
She means as a full-time para, staying as a para. Oh,
staying as a para?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
so I think that's so Pam, do you know if in the IRS regulations, if that's allowed, if it's
for surf, it's not.
Right. But this is a money purchase plan. Yeah. So it might be a little bit different based on the IRS. So the question would be, is if you can withdraw it, will there be penalties on withdrawing it if you can withdraw it? So I think that's the secondary piece.
So the IRS now permits and what they refer to as an in-service distribution from a money purchase plan. Well, from a government money purchase plan from when a participant turns age 59 and a half.
That's considered a qualifying event. You need a qualifying event. So it's either separation of service or age of 59 and a half.
Right. So I think to answer your question, Hyclis, if you're 61 and you're in this plan, then it sounds like you can withdraw the money. Pam or Derek, I assume it's like any other type of defined contribution where you'd have to pay taxes or a penalty on it or something like that, whatever the IRS says. But
if you roll it over to an IRA, it'd be a non-tax event.
Right.
And no penalty, so it'd be a roll. But that would have to be a separation from service. So Pam, I'm confused. So there's a new stipulation that if someone's still employed and they reach quote-unquote retirement age of 59 and a half, they can roll their money out?
Yes. Well, it's not new, but they lowered the age at which someone can do it. So I think it used to be 62 and now it's 59 and a half.
Okay. Yeah.
Go ahead, Michael.
No, I was just going to say, I think that kind of clarifies your point of if you're over 59 and a half and over, sounds like you can roll it over to your own plan, even if you're employed with the Board of Ed.
Right. So that's what I was looking for in this language to ensure that those who are still employed are able to, at 59 and a half or older, take it out, roll it over, or whatever they would like to do.
And then continue to be a parent, continue to contribute and take it out again when they leave.
Yes.
So Pamela, is that considered an in-service distribution?
Yes.
Okay, so like a one-time in-service distribution.
Right. So
they could technically still be employed full-time or does it have to be part-time?
No, it doesn't matter how much they work, full or part-time.
So it's an in-service distribution.
Yes.
So could we amend this to reflect accordingly? Pam?
Oh, from my perspective, it's a business decision. But yes, we could have somebody be allowed to withdraw when they reach age 59 and a half, even if they are still working and still working as a para.
So if we want to move forward would you want her to just do, so a couple things, if we want to approve this amendment, we'd have to take a vote on it. And then Pamela can, you know, draft up the official one. And then we can get it to whoever for signature. I think it would be the Board of Ed would need to sign it. And then also we would need to know if we want what date we would want to use as the effective date, if it would need to be January 1 of 2023.
Okay. Can I just ask a couple of questions?
Can you hear me?
Oh, hi, everybody. I just have a couple of questions because I was in another meeting when I was reading this. And so it's still not clear to me. And one of the questions I wanted to ask now that I'm actually listening to the group. So we're our full-time paras that are working part-time, their part-time wages as well are computed when we do the yearly where we put in our share?
No.
So it's just, because I heard part-time. So if they come back part-time, they're no longer eligible for the plan, correctly?
Right. They're no longer paying into it, Linda. They just, right now, as it stands in the plan, if they're employed by us in any capacity, so if they're a full-time teacher, a part-time para, whatever, if they're still employed with us, they can't take the money out. So this is allowing them to do that if they're 59 and a half. And even though they're still working here, they can withdraw the money. But when they are no longer full-time paras, they're not contributing anymore.
Okay. All right. So it's not because, you know, with them getting one check, it's kind of hard to, to decide, well, how much of that check is, you know, for the pension. You just, I guess there's a code for the full-time check because we do have a lot of part-timers that are full-timers as well. Now that we did the MOU for the $25 an hour, it's just going to get bigger. And I just wanted to make sure that we're not going to be on the hook for the extra part-time pay because that can be exorbitant.
Yeah, no, we have the
adding all that together.
The part-time pay is set up to not have pension deducted from it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I read the third amendment and I don't know. And like I said, listening to the group, it's like the amendment is not clear because there's so many questions. You know, us talking back and forth, I think this amendment needs to be tweaked so that it's clear what is happening and what doesn't happen. Because, you know, we are sitting on the call today and then, you may have folks coming in tomorrow that, you know, have a different interpretation of what this amendment is saying. So I think just the wording needs to be, in my opinion, the wording needs to be clearer.
I agree.
Okay. So I'm going to go over it and with Pam, and we'll get different language clearer for everybody, and we'll send it out before we send it to the Board of Ed. Is that sufficient for everybody?
Mm-hmm. I think we'll need
to know how the board is.
I was going to say, Leanna, I think we need to make a vote on exactly what you're going to be revising.
The committee members would have to vote on it, which would then allow Pamela to move forward with making that change.
Okay.
So Hiklis, would you want to make, do you have a motion to make of what you want this amendment to incorporate?
All right, let me take a stab at it. So I make a motion that we amend section 9.1 to read as follows. Effective as of January 1st, 2023, a participant with employment status who has attained the age of 51 and a half and who ceases to provide services to the Board of Education as a paraprofessional or ceases to provide service for the Board of Education on a full-time basis is able to withdraw all of the monies vested in this plan. And then two, any paraprofessional reaching the age of 59 and a half or older and still working as a paraprofessional is able to withdraw their investment and at a one time at that age. And then if they continue to work, then they will be able to withdraw the remainder at the time of separation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get that. I think it makes sense. It's basically leaving what's there, but then adding the part about continuing, you know, somebody who's continuing as a para also being able to withdraw at the age of 59 and a half.
Yes.
Is there a committee member who wants to second that motion?
I'll second Heiklis's motion.
Okay. All those in favor say aye. Heiklis?
Aye.
Mike?
Aye.
Lisa?
Aye.
I am an I as well. So that'll pass. Pam, does that make sense? Did you, we'll talk about if you have any questions of you know, the motion that she just made, and then you can send the draft to me.
Well, I know I have one question right away. So if somebody's 59 and a half and they take a withdrawal when they reach 59 and a half, and then later they cease providing services as a paraprofessional, can they again take a withdrawal, or is it one time under each of those options?
The first, when they take, if they reach 59 and a half and take the what they have in and continue to serve, they can only take again upon separation. So it's only two times they can ever take at 59 and a half and up in separation.
Yeah, so they would withdraw everything that they put in up until 59 and a half. Then it's kind of like starting over. And when they resign or leave or separate, then they would take whatever was left after their first withdrawal. Mm-hmm. Does that answer?
So somebody can take a one-time distribution when they reach age 59 and a half. And then they can take a distribution when they terminate employment completely with the city. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it wouldn't be a partial payment, a partial distribution the first time, though. It'd be all of what's there the first time, and then anything that they add to it after that the second time.
Right. Okay. So if that's what you want, I don't even think we need to refer to somebody who ceases to provide services for the board as a paraprofessional.
Like the first part that's there right now?
Yeah, because it's simply somebody can take a distribution when they reach, somebody can take a one-time distribution of the entire amount at 59 and a half.
Okay, does that work?
Yeah. She's right.
Does as that long work? As it's worded, as long as it's worded, the thing is to make sure it's worded in a way that anybody who reads it totally understand it. Yeah. So that's the key, is to say anybody who reached 59 and a half can withdraw.
So anyone who reaches 59 and a half, whether continuing service as a paraprofessional or continuing service in another job title, is able to withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
And then can later withdraw any remainder when they
separate.
Okay. Does that work, Pam?
Suppose they go from a para to a teacher. The money has to sit there until they retire.
Till they get 59 and a half. Till they hit 59 and a half.
No, but I'm talking about if a person decides, like with the programs we have, and they have a bachelor's, so decide, say that I'm 60 years old and I take a teaching job because I have my bachelor's and I get DSAP. They are no longer eligible to be in the union. Now, say they took money out and now they still have a balance in there. Does the balance roll until they actually leave the district?
Currently,
at that age, they could take everything and nothing would be owed to them.
I think, Linda, what you're asking is, I think it would depend on their circumstance, right? So if you're 60 years old and you go from a para to a teacher, you could leave your money in that purchase plan until you separate from service.
Okay.
Or you can roll it over into a whole nother plan if you want, all at once. Because if you go from a para to a teacher, you're not contributing to that plan any further.
Right.
So I think it's up to the employee. Now, if the para is 40 per se, and they go from a para to a teacher, they would have to leave that money in the fund until they reach 59 and a half, or they separate from the Board of Education, whichever comes first. Mm-hmm. So I think age plays a part in it as well.
Okay. So can I, hi everybody, I'm Christine Bourne. I'm the new business director in the finance office, and I served on the pension board for a prior position for 30 years. And I maybe think that it would be a good idea to just section this out, that it says, you know, section one is anybody prior to age 59 and a half cannot take distribution unless they leave employment. Anybody at 59 and a half who moves to another union, you know, and section it out so those three or four scenarios are set out. Because I think that Heiklis's comments about it being clear to the person that's reading it, because at 49 and a half, a 59 and a half and earlier, you can't touch it unless you leave. At 59 and a half, you can take a one-time distribution. And this is what I'm hearing from you. I'm not familiar specifically with this plan, but at 59 and a half, you can take a one-time distribution and continue your contributions if you remain an employee. If you leave employment at 59 and a half, you can take all of the funds. And so maybe just set those three or four out separately so that you're not combining them in one paragraph.
Thanks. Thank you, Christine. That makes sense.
I can follow that.
I think you've all said the scenarios, so just set them out that, 9.1 A is effective, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Any employee who is has not reached the age of 59 and a half is required to leave funds in the plan unless they resign their employment from all city positions, because you're saying that, or all city board of ed positions, because if they move positions, they can't touch the money. They have to actually leave New Haven.
No, I think that's why we are saying if it's just one thing covers it all, anyone who's at 59 and a half can withdraw. Because regardless, if you're younger than 59 and a half, you can't, you can't withdraw. So that's why I think she was trying to simplify it into just one, one thing. I don't know. I mean, we could do it however everyone wants it, but to outline every single scenario is kind of just saying the same thing, because each scenario will say you cannot withdraw until you're 59 and a half. You cannot withdraw until you're 59 and a half.
So if you're 50 years old and you leave the city employment, you can't take this money with you.
No, that's already in play, that you can take your money if you separate completely for the city. We're not changing anything with that. Right now, if somebody leaves employment with the city, they can withdraw at whatever age. But currently, if somebody goes from a para to a teacher, a para to security guard, a para to a firefighter, they can't touch that money at all until they're no longer with the city. So this is changing it so that if they are 59 and a half and they get another job for the city, or if they're 59 and a half and they continue as a para, they can withdraw at that age.
One time.
Right.
One time and all of it?
All of it. And then again, when they leave.
Right. Because then they'll have the balance of what they kept paying it.
Yeah. Mike, did you have something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, why don't we just take a stab at it? I think everyone's kind of voted on. We all know where we want to go with the language, right? I think we've all kind of did the scenarios. I like maybe putting bullet points out. Let's, Leanna, you and Pam just kind of work on it. And you can just circulate it to the committee members to make sure it's what we all voted on. I think we got the gist of the motion and the approval.
Okay. No problem. Okay, that leads us to item 3C, which is an update on the investment fees coming out of the paraprofessional statements. I know a few weeks ago, Jessica emailed the Board of Ed the document that was requested from the Ascensus, who was the previous bookkeeping company. Is there an update on the Board of Ed side as far as this item goes? Linda or Christine, did you have an update on the Board of Ed side for this item?
I haven't been involved with this, so I can't answer.
I think the issue
was something
with this,
sent to Tom.
Yeah, I was going to say, Linda, I think the issue with this is Tom Lamb was dealing with it because based on the money purchase plan document, Tom Lamb as the COO is kind of in charge of this and makes the decision on it. But because he's on paternity leave, I don't think, and it sounds like he let Linda know about any particular items on this. So I'm not sure where we go, Linda, or if you know when Tom is going to be back.
January 9th, I heard.
Who was on the meeting, the last meeting? I know there was a representative from the Board of Ed who asked for this data. Can't remember her name, though.
Juanita? Was it Juanita, I think?
Okay. Yeah, because I think she was the one that was going to look at it as well and requested it, but I don't think she's on this call.
Well, I've taken Juanita's position over in general funds, and she moved over to special funds, and I've only been here 3 weeks, so you know, it's nice to meet you all. Okay. I can connect with Tom when he gets back and talk to Juanita to see what it was that she was looking for, and we could maybe table this for the next meeting, if you don't mind.
So, Jess, can you forward to Christine the fee document? So, Christine, I think Juanita was working with Tom on the waiting for the financial documents. So what Jess got from a census was basically since 2016, how much there were in fee charges. And they wanted, and I think that's the number they wanted to kind of look at, because that's as far back, I believe. Jess, correct me if I'm wrong, the census could go back.
Yes.
Or went back.
Correct.
So I think, Christine, Jessica will forward you the document for you to look at. It's broken out by year, and you can, and you know, there's a total amount of fees that were charged per year. So that's what I think Tom was waiting for to look at.
Great, that'll be perfect.
Okay, so we will continue this on to the next meeting. Is there any new business that anyone wants to discuss? Okay, then Derek, Raymond James presentation, please.
Okay. You pulled it up, or Taylor, the presentation?
Yep. Share that. Yeah.
I'm sorry, did you have an open discussion? I'm sorry, I just was a little distracted here. But did you say if we had anything else to discuss on this subject or something else?
Yeah, before Derek gets started, was there anything under new business that anyone wanted to discuss?
Oh, okay. It's not so new, but I had a question regarding the payment. Members have left, who have left have not received their separation, their separation payment. So I wanted to know what's going on with that.
So we're waiting for the Board of Ed to finalize, and now it's in the attorney's hands and Corp Counsel to finalize the agreement to officially hire NWPS as our new provider. I've submitted all about 16 to 18 employees, former employees paperwork to NWPS so that they can review them and be ready to go, so that as soon as the Board of Ed has finalized everything, they can start approving them. Once they do that, I'm going to forward it over to Derek's side, and hopefully Derek can put a rush on them and get them processed as soon as possible, because I know the people have been waiting and they're calling me and emailing me on a weekly basis.
So you're saying WPA, they're not approved by the board yet? I think I've seen that being approved by the Board of Education. Are we saying it's not approved?
But there's multiple steps. There's been tons of back and forth emails. So I guess it was approved, but it hasn't officially been signed and submitted back to NWPS to allow them to start their working for us.
So what can we do to speed it up? Because people are really outraged, because it's been months and months.
Jessica's office and my office know that firsthand, because we get the phone calls every single day.
I thought there was a document that Tom, I guess they moved through the board and Tom just had to get it signed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that document is still missing?
Nope. The, Tom's, I forget her name, the, his assistant.
Selena.
Yep. She finally got this stuff between her. She was going back and forth with NWPS with forms that each side needed for, I'm not sure exactly what the forms were, but they were going back and forth. She finally got that stuff to them last week. And it went to Corp Council, to Mike, Mike's signature. Mike signed off on it. It went to Corp Council. Corp Council assigned it to Attorney Alex Sietis. And it's on, in his hands now. He said he's going to put a rush on it. I've asked them, both him and Corp Council, and told them it's very, very urgent.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's sad. I feel so bad for these people that keep, some of them keep, you know, asking me, and I could just have to say, well, you know, I told them we change bookkeepers, but people are upset because that's what they're counting on to.
I know. I understand.
Have no pension. This is all we have. This little bit of lump sum money. No, but none of the parents, when they leave, have any pension to get. So it's really not a good thing for them not to be able to receive this money on a timely, in a timely fashion. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to stress that because I've been asked, and I promised people that I would inquire and see what can be done. I know it's frustrating for them to have worked many years, and now, you know, when it's time for them to reap whatever they had put in, they cannot get it.
The good news is, I think as soon as this document is signed and submitted back to NWPS, they should be good to go, because Jessica's already uploaded all of their, all of those who have left, all of their information.
Oh, so you, okay, it's just to send it out once the paperwork is signed. Okay.
Yeah,
so
I wanted them to get a head start on reviewing them in case there was an issue or some kind of something that they needed in addition to what's already been submitted by these people. I didn't want there to be any more of a delay. So I asked them to start reviewing them before we were they're even officially hired. Mm-hmm. And they have been doing that.
Okay.
So basically we have to wait for Corp Council is what we're saying now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They just got it yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Was there anything else, Tyclis?
And the statements, is that the same thing with the statements that goes out every year, Jessica? No one has received any statements.
What, the investigation?
A census didn't mail out the statements?
No, nobody had. No, we have not received statements.
Census was supposed to mail out statements.
Yeah, right? They sent me a copy of them, and I assumed that they had sent them out because they were required to do that.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get anything. Neither did Rick. Nothing.
Nobody. I didn't get either.
Census finished the evaluation like what, end of October probably? So yeah, they definitely would have been.
Yeah, and I really thought that some people had received them. But maybe not. Maybe they were referring to older statements. I can try and reach out to a census. See if they'll respond, but we definitely told them they had to mail out those statements as part of their final, you know, contract with us.
Do you have anything that people could access, Jessica, that they sent you? That
I have one file, and it's in a PDF of everybody's all together. Like, it's not broken out for each person. It's just one big document, big file.
Jess, the last one we got was in 2021. I'm looking at it right now.
Okay.
Jess, do you want Pam to reach out? I don't know if it'd be better. Because
Yeah, I really don't know how they're going to respond to me since we haven't hired them. We don't have them as our, you know, client anymore.
It was in their contracts. I believe I said that they're responsible for the final. Was it not?
Yeah, I believe it was.
So maybe we can refer to the contract. It's probably stronger coming from the attorney for sure.
Yeah, Pam, would you be able to do that?
Pamela, are you still? I think she's still on the call.
Well, at least she had sent you the document you asked for, so she might. They may think they have done it, but or I don't know. I think we should send something to them to ask that it be sent out immediately because that's their part of their contract.
Right.
Attorney Fleming, are you still on? I think you're muted.
Oh yeah, sorry. I can draft something to send to them if you want. I can send it to you for your review. And you can either send it or it can come directly from me, however you want.
I think it might be better maybe because they kind of give Jess and I the runaround. I don't know if they would work quicker or respond better if it kind of came directly from you. But sure. I could look at it if you want before you send it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Hi, Chris. Was that all?
That was it. Yes.
Okay. Back to you, Derek.
Good. Thank you.
Let me share that screen.
So as we all know, the markets, if you turn on any news program at all, you know the market has been beaten up very badly. Last time we met, we spoke about this as well. Traditionally, we always talk about eat well portion of the portfolio and the sleep well portion of the portfolio. And the eat well portion are the stocks and then sleep well are the bonds. And we say sleep well because typically bonds are safe and their value of bonds do not fluctuate very, very much, with the exception of the environment we are in now. Bonds have gone down in value as well as stocks, and bonds have gone down in double digits, high single digits to low double digits, as well as stocks are in the mid to high double digits. So there's really been no reprieve. This fund has been very, very conservatively invested. As you can see, the right chart on the right, the pie chart, it's only 33% of the portfolio invested in stocks. So it's only a third of this fund is invested in stocks, yet we're still losing money because, as I mentioned earlier, our sleep well, our feel-good money is still being eroded. There are some bright spots in the horizon, and we also have to remind the board that this fund has established an investment policy statement, which I think the next quarterly meeting will review the investment policy statement. And what that means is because this fund is established to help grow money, there's actually a burden of fiduciary responsibility of all of us members and investment advisors to prudently invest this money as it were our own. So this money has been prudently invested and it's set to a parameter of guidelines. So
you're frozen.
I think we lost audio. That was strange. There we go. Okay.
Back?
Yep.
That's weird. Okay. I apologize. I'm not sure where I lost you, but what I was talking about is the investment guidelines, the investment policy statement. Because this fund is established to invest money on behalf of several people, there are guidelines that have to maintain. So there's a certain percentage of equities that need to always be in the fund, a certain percentage of fixed income, which always needs to be in the fund. So and where we go in between the stock and bond portfolio is up to us as a committee. So we are in line with our investment policy statement, which we will review the next time we meet. But for now, we just have to remember that we need to remain fully invested, which we are, but very conservatively so. Just want to show you the allocation. If you go to page 10 of 24, and we could scroll around here. There's not much to see here. Actually, why don't we pause right here?
Sorry.
That's okay, my fault. I just wanted to show you, was that three? The top right chart. So the blue line is the money that's invested, the basis, if you will, and the green line is the growth of the money. So even though we're down, this fund is still up over time. So there's more money in the fund than what was put into the fund. So even though the markets are tumultuous and there's really a lot of down in the markets, we're still positive for all the members. So there's still money being made over the entirety of the fund. So that's one thing I wanted to show you. So if we could go now 10 of 24, Jess. Oh, Leanna, I'm sorry.
There you go.
Okay, so if you scroll down a smidge, is this screen split for you? Because it's split
I think I I think it did split.
Like a different view.
Is that better?
That's fine. Just scroll down a little bit more. Okay, so what this is, we look at risk and return. So the top line is the portfolio. I'm looking at the numbers, not the graph, but you see the 4.68 annualized return and the annualized risk is 7.72. So just to put that in perspective, you know, the stock market, so to speak, has a risk parameter. If you can see the S&P 500 of 20 and 19, you see the MSCI ACWI, which is the All Country World Index, and the S&P 500 is 20. So you can see that there's high risk and you get more return typically. That's the eat well portion of the portfolio. And you can see the bond market, which is the Bloomberg US aggregate bond, you can see it has a 5.82 risk percentage or risk tolerance, and it's actually down 4% annualized return. So you can see, you know, even though that we have to have this component of fixed income or bonds to sleep well, you can see how that's a drag on the portfolio. This fund is up just about 5% per year annualized as a compound growth rate. So this is not a linear, this is compound annual growth rate of just under 5% with a risk of 7.7. So that's very good growth rate with a low amount of risk. Even though the markets are really not doing well, the fund is holding up pretty well. You could go to page 12, Emily. So this just shows the total return of the two different funds. So you can see the cash bucket and the investment bucket, and that all the way since inception. So the investment bucket is up 8% since inception, and the cash bucket, as you can see, is basically flat. So that's the drag on the overall portfolio since inception. And if you could go now to 18 of 24. And again, this just graphically shows, you know, what I that chart in the upper right hand corner. But you can see the cumulative performance is about 13.4% on the fund. So even though the markets are up, down, the fixed income is down, equities are down, you can still see there's still just a little over 13.3% growth rate on the money. You know, we had a couple great years in the market. We had one very, very bad year in the market. And really what's going on is, did you hear me? I'm sorry. What's going on in the market? Go ahead. Sorry.
No, sorry. I just coughed and I wasn't on mute. I apologize.
The beauty of Zoom. So what I'm going to talk about now is just in the markets, what's going on and where we see potential opportunities. So if you could pull up the market info. So this just summarizes what's going on in the market. So obviously this equity markets, if we could maybe make this a little bigger so we can see it, and I don't, maybe get rid of that reading pane on the side. There we go. All right. So this just shows you all the different equity indices and you see year to date in the prior 12 months. So basically, you know, we're at year end here and you can see this is through December 8th. There's a lot of very, very negative returns across all asset classes in the equity markets, with the exception of energy. So we all know we're paying more money at the gas pump. We're paying more money for home heating oil. You know, it's inflationary. That's the only asset class that's made money this year. And you can see it's made a good amount of money. What I basically want to talk about here is just, you know, I've never seen in 20 years in this business, I've never seen the amount of data dependent news out of the market. So basically the market is reacting on whatever comes out of the Fed. So we're looking at raising rates, we're looking at cutting off money supply. Everything that's happening in the market for the most part is data dependent upon, you know, economic data. So unemployment numbers, you know, inflationary numbers, you know, rate increases. So because of that, you're kind of just in this until we see some sort of reprieve from the Fed. So the Fed came out today and they were historically raising rates at 75 basis points, which is 0.75%. So the Fed has done several rate increases of 0.75%. He came out today and they're backing that down to 50 basis points, which is a 0.5%. So now, but we're going to continue into next year with rate increases. So the Fed is basically fighting inflation by choking off demand. And what do I mean by that? By raising interest rates, it's actually creating demand destruction in the economy to slow down the inflationary pressure. And because of that, we are odds are in the likelihood of a recession next year, and it may be possibly into 2024, is increasing. You know, we think pretty strongly that there is going to be an inflation. I mean, I'm sorry, there is going to be a recession. It's just a matter of how deep of the recession and how hard is the recession. So the stock market is taking all of this information into account. It's saying, okay, we went from very, very loose economic fiscal policy, low interest rates, to high interest rates in a year, no liquidity in the markets, and high levels of inflation. And we're put in, so now the markets are pricing in a recession. The stock market is predictive of what's happening in the economy 6 to 9 months in the future. So what's happening in equity markets today and throughout this whole year is what's going to happen 6 to 9 months from now in the economy. That's basically what's happening. So the market is digesting the fact that odds are high we're going to have a recession next year, and they're revising earnings on stocks lower, and valuations are coming down by price compression. They're coming down with earnings revisions. There's demand destruction in the fixed income world. So I know I'm throwing a lot at you, but I guess the slight silver lining in this is, you know, we've withstood this correction very strongly with this fund. So, you know, our eat well and our sleep well portion of the portfolio, we're still positive, we're still up, even though the markets have been getting demolished. So when these things do settle, and they will settle, we'll be in a better position to get a little bit more potential equity exposure. Obviously, we'll talk about that as a committee. But that's where the opportunity lies, because stocks went from a very, very high price to a more moderate price now. And I think we'll probably see some better buying opportunities, you know, early next year. When I say next year, 2023, the next 3 to 4 months.
Month or two.
Pardon?
No, I said in the next month or two.
Yeah, right. So the opportunity set here is, okay, we've battled the storm. We're coming out on the other side. We just need the Fed to ultimately get into an opportunity where as soon as the Federal Reserve comes out and says, okay, we're slowing down rate cuts, maybe we're going to skip, you know, a quarter of rate cuts. Once that happens, I think the market will react in a very positive way, and we'll see a tailwind. What is now a headwind will become a tailwind. So for right now, there's really not much we can do except just battle the storm and be disciplined on our investment process, which we are. As a committee, we haven't made any rash decisions. We're very conservatively invested. The fund is still up, you know, with a compound rate of return that's acceptable. And we think that we'll just, you know, head steady into the future. We think mid-year next year, we should be hopefully coming out of this in the equity markets, and we should be able to have some good buying opportunities. I'm open to answer any questions. I could go over more charts if you'd like, but I want to be respectful of everybody's time. This has been a pretty long meeting. But if anybody has any questions, I'm certainly prepared to answer them. If not.
Hey, Derek, thank you for your presentation. You always give us some good understanding of how the stocks and bonds work, and you seem to have a good handle of this plan. But I just wanted to find out a little bit more of the checks and balances, the ins and outs, funds going in, funds coming out. If there's a page, I'm a little novice when it comes to this type of thing. So see if you can help me out here. Sure. Just to get me to understand, or us on a whole to understand how much went in from members and the city, and how much came out. Is there something you could point me to or help me out?
Sure. So
to understand,
you know, again, so I don't have a breakdown of anything. So you have to remember, any type of distributions is your record keeper. So if you want to go back, Leanna, to the performance report, somewhere that one there, and then scroll down to, I think it's towards the bottom. I can't see. Yeah, let's just go back one slide at a time, if we could. I'll see if there's an inflow and outflow. I'm pretty sure there is.
I was going to say, I think there's a cash flow analysis on it.
Yeah, but a lot of that. Okay, right here. Hold on. Okay. Right here. So you could see, hi, Chris. So the contribution, so year to date, so for the calendar year of 2021, you see the contribution. So it's the second column and second row. You see -58,690.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a net number of distributions and expenses in and out of the fund. So that's netted out. I don't have a breakdown because that's not what, you know, we don't have that. All we have is a, you know, we just have the investment two accounts with, so we don't know. So what happens, the process is a census will have the, you know, if a member comes in and gets a distribution, it goes to, I believe the process to Jessica, get a form, sends to a census, what was once a census. And then they'll say, okay, you know, Tom Smith has $5,000, and then they send it to us and we just distribute the money out and mail it to the payroll, and the payroll sends it to the member. So we don't have a breakdown of inflows and outflows. We just net out the numbers. So I think if you want to see the actual inflows and outflows, I would imagine, again, that would be in a census document. Right? I mean, right, Jess? I mean, do you have any thought on that? You're on mute. Jess, you're on mute.
Sorry. I believe the census would have that information, but whether they're going to provide it to us now, I don't know.
But yeah, so you know, maybe First State Trust might have it. So First State Trust is the one that actually does the checks to the members. So I can ask First State Trust, Hyklis, for a inflow and outflow detailed report for you and have it sent over.
Who's that?
They're the ones that actually cut the check. So they do the withholdings for the tax withholdings, and they're the ones that actually send the checks to your members. So they're like a payroll type of service.
So what about the inflows? How the city should have that, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Is it payroll?
Well, so the every time the powers are paid, the amount that comes out of their paycheck, that fund, that amount gets sent to Derek's office and gets invested. Then at the end of the year, the Board of Ed cuts one big check to match what this Board of Ed employees have put in. Do you want to see the amount that the Board of Ed put in June from this past June? Or
so if summer? We could just get the supporting documents of, you're saying every month our contribution goes to
every paycheck, every pay period. Yeah. A check goes to Derek's office.
But it's a single check. It's a net, it's a gross amount of
gross amount of what everybody contributes.
Right.
So is there ever a document that shows whatever goes to Derek? Derek gets $10,000 this month, next month, the other month, or the other pay period, and then the city puts in. Is there a supporting document that shows those inflows to the plan?
I mean, I at the end, in the summertime, in order to get the amount that the Board of Ed has to contribute to match, I get a mm-hmm. listing of all of the checks that were issued to and sent to Derek for the school year. Mm-hmm. And I break it down by month. And then at the end, I have a total. I mean, it's a spreadsheet. It's not a report or something, you know, official. It's a spreadsheet that I make up based on what's been sent to Derek. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that, I have a total. And that's the total that the Board of Ed has to also match.
And then do you have the document to support that they pay in?
Yeah, Linda, you could probably get a copy of those checks. Or is Linda still on? Or Juanita, I'm sorry, Christine. Somebody can probably get a copy of those checks that were issued from the board.
You're looking for how we calculate the amount that goes in every year, right?
Yeah, she wants to show how much the Board of Ed contributed, that the Board of Ed put in their portion, I believe.
Yeah, I'll email the business office, and I think, you know, you can, we'll get how much we've contributed over the last few years to show you.
Okay, so that, I think what the unit is looking for is what the, you know, something to show what the city puts in and what we put in. So we can have a checks and balance, because we, you know, we're not we're not the we're not financially what's the word I'm looking for? We're not the we're more layman in this. So I just want to get a more layman perspective of what's going on, so we can see and know that all our monies are going in, and all the city monies are, and the money from the city is going in, and then what that looks like, and then what, you know, then we can see what we're, you know, what the interests are.
Yeah, I think that's something we can certainly take a look at, because again, like Jess said, we do it on a deduction basis. So we would run the deduction, employee deduction, and look at the Board of Ed's match. So give us a few weeks, Highcliffe, with the holiday schedule coming up for a lot of folks. And then I think, you know, between myself, Linda, Christine, and Juanita, we can produce something and send it out to see if that's what you're looking for.
Thank you. That would be helpful. Appreciate that. And let me see if there was another question I had here. I think that was it. Do you have anything, Lisa, Troy, or Emily, anything from you guys that you think would be helpful for the union on this subject?
I'm good, Heiklis. Very, very informative meeting.
Thanks.
Likewise. Yes, I agree.
Okay. Well, thank you all. Happy holidays. See you again soon.
Thank you, Derek. Enjoy your game.
And it's over.
Oh, shoot. Sorry.
One, unfortunately. This is life.
All right. So I think that concludes everything on our agenda. You know, this meets quarterly, so our next meeting will most likely be sometime in March. They go by fast, those 3 months go by fast. So I do hope everyone enjoys the holidays. I'll just need committee members to vote on leaving the meeting, and then we're all set.
Before we leave the meeting, I'm always having this, right? Can we set for the next meeting that we address the fees, that somebody look into those fees, and that a report is ready for us for the next quarterly meeting?
Yes, I mean, it was on this agenda with him being out on paternity leave. I have it as, you know, continuing it to the next one, so... members of the Board of Ed, Christine just joined, so, you know, we'll get her the documents that she needs so that it'll be ready for the next meeting.
Thank you.
I have my marching orders for fees and for contributions, both employee and employer.
So, Christine, if you, me, and Juanita, and if Linda wants to join, can just meet maybe next week, set up a time to meet next week, we'll go over everything.
Perfect. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, guys.
It was nice to meet you all.
It was a pleasure, Christine. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
I'll make a motion for the meeting to adjourn.
I'll second.
Okay. Lisa, you're all set with that decision?
All set. Thank you so much. Great meeting.
All right. Happy holidays, everyone. You all take care.
You too. Thank you. Have a good night.
Bye.
Happy holidays.